From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gastina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.
Coming up this week, the debate over universal pre-kindergarten shows no signs of slowing down. Our political observer Alan Shartok shares his thoughts on the pre-K fight, and the New York League of Conservation Voters releases its annual environmental review of the state's congressional representatives. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. The debate over universal pre-kindergarten shows no signs of slowing down at the state capitol in Albany. The Democratic mayor of New York City is not backing down from his plan to tax the wealthy to pay for pre-K, while upstate and suburban Republicans in the state Senate say they will block a vote on the tax proposal. The Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt reports.
New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio, in his State of the City address, stuck to his plan to continue to ask state lawmakers for permission to tax the wealthy to fund universal pre-kindergarten. De Blasio says he's not advocating for a statewide income tax.
We're not asking Albany to raise the state income tax by even a penny to pay for universal pre-K and after-school programs here in New York City. We're simply asking Albany to allow New York City to tax itself, its wealthiest residents, those making a half million or more.
But the leader of the Senate Republicans, Dean Skello, says his House is not inclined to vote on a bill, known as a home rule message, to grant permission for tax increases for New York City. Senator Skello and his Republican members represent many parts of Long Island and across upstate New York. Skello says raising taxes now would hurt the economy.
We've seen in the past when New York State went under with bad management, mayor or the city council, it infected the entire state in terms of revenues, in terms of the finance industry. So the last thing we need is to see high earners leave New York State, because then we lose their tax dollars.
Senator Skello's remarks annoyed the leader of the Assembly Democrats, Speaker Sheldon Silver, who's been supportive of the mayor's tax the rich plan.
I don't understand why Senator Skello would remove a viable option from the table at this stage of the budget discussion.
Senate Republicans rule in a coalition government with a handful of breakaway Democrats known as the Independent Democratic Conference. IDC leader Jeff Klein issued a statement implying that he would hold up the budget over the issue, saying he would not approve a spending plan that fails to realize the vision of universal pre-K. But Klein walked back those comments a day later, saying he was not closing the door on other alternatives to the tax on the wealthy. But he does say a plan by Governor Cuomo to more slowly phase in universal pre-K does not provide enough money soon enough.
The mayor put forth an amount of money which is completely different than what the governor proposed. So there's a gap. So now it's up to us to come up with the money or adapt the mayor's plan.
Governor Cuomo, like the Senate Republicans, is also against raising taxes this year. The state already has a temporary income tax surcharge on the wealthy. Senate GOP leader Skello says he prefers the phased-in pre-K plan advanced by Cuomo. Speaker Silver says he's open to negotiations on both the mayor's and the governor's options. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. Alan, this week, Governor Cuomo said he's opposed to letting individual municipalities set their own minimum wage and tax rates, as New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio wants to do. He gave his State of the City address this week. People came to Albany to push for this minimum wage increase. What do you make of that?
It's war, I tell you, and I mean it's really war. There are two different philosophies. Bill de Blasio, the new mayor of New York, has excited a lot of people. He says we have to tax the rich in order to provide the services and the equality in the society that we want, pre-K and other things. The governor says, and looking at the polls and knowing what people are feeling, no new taxes. We can't have taxes. I've run my whole career on that. He's looking at the purples, in other words, the people between the Republicans and the Democrats, who could go either way in an election. And so what you get is this real antipathy. Now, the two men claim that they're very good friends. But you know, David, in politics, things change. On the one hand, you get these allegiances. Cuomo hired de Blasio at HUD. He worked with him there. But Cuomo was a tough boss at HUD. I've talked to an awful lot of people, and I can tell you, they thought he was a difficult guy to work for, at least the ones I'm talking to. So that while they can say they work together there, I can tell you that there is now a basic philosophical difference between the two men. And the polls are showing that people are sticking with Cuomo. You know, people are funny. They think if they can get something for free, they want it. So Cuomo comes along and says, yeah, we're all for pre-K. We'll give you pre-K. We'll phase it in. De Blasio says, no, I want it right now. De Blasio talks about inequality in the city, wants to be able to have basic home rule and do what he needs to do to raise the taxes. Cuomo says, no, I'm the governor of the whole state. The people are siding with Cuomo right now because if somebody's telling him, yeah, we can have the pre-K, but you don't have to raise the tax rate to do it. Well, think about that for a second. You know, it's just a finite amount of money. If you're going to give de Blasio his pre-K and you're not going to raise the taxes, you're going to have to take it from somewhere else in the budget. Some of the teachers people think, hey, you know, you're going to take it out of education in order to reallocate it for pre-K. And education has been hit harder and harder. And there are all kinds of lawsuits. The state promised it would do better in funding schools, and it hasn't done it. So this thing will play out. And people are going to get an eyeful as to what reality is. So from where I'm sitting, it's going to be a fascinating war to sit back and watch.
Alan, you also spoke with Assemblyman Democrat from Manhattan, Richard Gottfried, the chair of the Health Committee, where he was out this week at a press conference for a single-payer health care system in New York.
Well, you know, he made a point. He said in Canada, where they do have single-payer universal health care, it started in each of the provinces. And he says if we started here in New York State, it'll catch on. You know, there are a lot of people who think that we have a wonderful Medicare system and that all you had to do was expand it and bring other people in. And so instead of 65 or 66 or whatever you're doing now, you do it in such a way that every year you add on another year, 64 or 63, and you cover everybody. You know, Gottfried makes a point, which is that the insurance companies, as long as the insurance companies are in the game, it's going to be expensive. It's going to be convoluted. I think Gottfried has a lot of guts. I think many Democrats believe in this. And yes, you'll have to pay for it. So that means that the taxes go up in order to do it. But you have a simple, easy-to-understand healthcare system.
He's also an advocate of medical marijuana and even a co-sponsor of a bill with Senator Liz Krueger on making it legal.
Well, you know, marijuana is a touchy subject. He says that we've tried prohibition, and that didn't work. We essentially have done the same thing with marijuana. I think he's right. There is a huge underground sale of marijuana. A lot of people smoke weed and get away with it. And people are making a lot of money. Criminals are making a lot of money with it. If you legalized it, you could have a system where people were, A, taxed on it, and B, held responsible. I mean, I asked them, what happens if some pothead crashes a car going the wrong way on the New York State thruway? He said the same thing. It happens now with alcohol, which is a far more insidious drug, and it is. And, you know, I think we're going to a point where marijuana is going to be legalized. I think that there are things that will happen with it that are not good, and it will be a gateway for some people for a drug, for greater drugs. You know, it is not an easy call. From where I'm sitting, it sounds to me like Gottfried makes sense.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartoff. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. The New York League of Conservation Voters released its annual environmental review of the state's congressional representatives. The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley joined a conference call to hear their assessment.
The League of Conservation Voters has published a scorecard on congressional environmental votes since 1970. It's published in consultation with other environmental groups, including the Environmental Defense Fund, the National Audubon Society, and the Union of Concerned Scientists. League of Conservation Voters Legislative Director Sarah Chifo says this scorecard comes in the wake of another year of record-breaking climate change impacts.
Climate change impacts are really here and now, and despite this reality, the U.S. House of Representatives continued its unprecedented assault on the environment and public health. A sad truth is it's a continuation of the assault we saw in the 112th Congress. We viewed that House as the most anti-environmental ever. And this scorecard is yet another disturbing reflection to the extent to which the Republican leadership of the U.S. House of Representatives is catering to the extreme Tea Party climate change deniers.
Chifo outlined the overall congressional scores, noting that 30 senators and 3 House members received a perfect score. 5 senators and 48 representatives received a zero. The average score in the House was 43%. In the Senate, it was 58%.
Among the most egregious attacks we saw in the House were efforts to roll back cornerstone environmental laws. These include the Clean Air Act, the Clean Water Act. We saw yet again efforts to legislatively approve the risky Keystone XL tar sands pipeline, to increase harmful drilling and fracking across the country, and appallingly to continue subsidizing dirty fossil fuels. Now, the good news and some reason for optimism is that the U.S. Senate and the Obama administration blocked the vast majority of these attacks on our environment.
New York's scorecard was released in conjunction with the National League of Conservation Voters 2013 National Environmental Scorecard of the 113th Congress. New York League of Conservation Voters President Marcia Bistrin reports that most of New York's representatives tended to vote in favor of the environment and clean energy.
Both of our senators, Chuck Schumer and Kirsten Gillibrand, had perfect scores in 2013. The results were quite as green for New York's delegation to the House of Representatives, where we saw a very wide range of scores. At the top, 7 members scored a 96. Nydia Velazquez, Yvette Clark, Jerry Nadler, Carolyn Maloney, Charlie Rangel, and Joe Crowley, all representing New York City districts, and Nita Lowy representing northern Westchester County and the lower Hudson Valley. At the bottom, scoring just 4 points, Tom Reed in the Southern Tier and Chris Collins in Western New York.
Bistrin found clear trends in Congress as a whole to vote along party lines, but said in New York, that was not followed by either party.
Take a look, for example, at Chris Gibson, a Republican who represents the 19th District in the Hudson Valley. He scored a 43, which is far from perfect, but Congressman Gibson had the highest score of any Republican House member in the nation, underscoring the environmental leanings of the Hudson Valley.
While the average score for the Republican caucus in the House was 5%, the House average was 43%. Bistrin notes that New York's House average was 72%.
There is a range of voting performance within the two parties. You know, we, for example, plan on working with Sean Maloney to get his score up. He had a 79, which for a Democrat is lower than we'd like. So, you know, there's work on both sides.
The scorecard highlights 28 votes in the House and 13 votes in the Senate using a scale of 0 to 100 based on the number of pro-environment votes cast divided by the total number of votes scored. A link to the League of Conservation Voters scorecard is available at WAMC.org.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
Concerned South End neighborhood residents in Albany spoke out this week about health and safety concerns surrounding Global Company's proposal to build 7 oil heating facilities at the Port of Albany and increase the amount of oil being shipped through the port, something communities around the state are dealing with as oil gets shipped throughout New York. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas has more.
The doors opened at 5:30 Wednesday, and a crowd of more than 200 turned out for a meeting that lasted until around 10. 75 people stood up to air their concerns before the crowd. Global Companies purchased its 63-acre Albany terminal in 2007 from ExxonMobil. The company handles a wide variety of petroleum products at its Albany facility and recently applied to the Department of Environmental Conservation to modify its existing air permit to allow for the installation and operation of boilers and heaters that would be used to heat products received at the terminal. Catherine Nadeau, Environmental Advocates Policy Director, says the plan to transport crude through Albany is a bad idea.
One of our concerns is, of course, the community that lives nearby that would bear the brunt of any type of environmental disaster should one occur.
First Ward Albany Common Council member Dorcia Pleers acknowledged Wednesday night's meeting as a first step toward engaging the community.
There was a lot of concern expressed about the comment-only format, which did not allow for true dialogue between the community and DEC, as well as Global Companies.
Former city councilor Dominic Calcellaro says Global sent a representative who addressed the crowd, then disappeared from public view.
There was no one from Global you could talk to, though, which was a little disappointing since the press release said that someone from Global would be there.
So nobody showed up?
Oh, no, someone came and spoke when they were allowed to give a presentation of their project, but they went there to answer questions from the public, which is kind of what we thought the meeting was supposed to be for.
DEC has already decided that Global's application is complete and that the project would not result in significant adverse impacts to the environment. Appleers noted the evening had a somewhat ominous tone.
Many residents, elected officials, and including myself, felt that the level of security that was at this event was unnecessary.
Calcellaro explained when he reached Giffen Elementary, he noticed a row of police vehicles lined up along the school's auditorium side.
Then you walk in inside and there's big presidents of Park Police, the Ancon Park Police, and then you go in the auditorium and every entrance and exit in the auditorium had at least two Park Police Rangers at the doors. To me, it was pretty insulting that they did this. I don't know what DEC was thinking. I've been to other hearings at DEC, and I've never seen that kind of display of law enforcement officials for a public meeting.
Do you think racially motivated?
I think I don't know if it was racially motivated, but I think because it was a minority area, low income, I don't know what they think people were going to start rioting or start attacking DEC. I mean, the people that came in wheelchairs and the elderly. And the children that were there, they were all going to just get up and start, you know, having a mass attack at DEC officials. I don't know what they were thinking. In fact, I'm planning on sending a letter to Commissioner Martens and to Governor Cuomo today.
DEC Executive Deputy Commissioner Mark Gerstmann characterized the meeting as very productive and adds officers were present at Giffen as a matter of public safety.
This is very similar to all of the other public hearings and public meetings that we have, raising oftentimes controversial issues. And we assign staff based upon standard operating procedures.
Sierra Club Conservation Director Roger Downs warns if ever there is a disaster in Albany, you'll pay for it.
More crude oil has spilled in the United States through rail car derailments and exploders combined. Last year, in each of the catastrophic events, responsible parties have shifted liability to subsidiaries that claim bankruptcy, leaving the millions in cleanup costs to the devastated communities themselves. And I think it's fair to say that if Albany was hit with a rail car explosion or a major spill in the Hudson River, the taxpayers would pick up the balance of the bill.
Riverkeeper's Kate Hudson is calling upon Governor Cuomo to address the crude oil issue immediately.
Other states have passed laws that require operators handling crude oil to have financial assurance in place before they are allowed to operate in New York, and we urge the governor to take, though, and the state legislature to take those very same steps.
The Cuomo administration did not return a call for comment in time for broadcast. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas. Thank you.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. New data released from the Bureau of Labor Statistics shows New York State and local government employees experienced double the rate of injury and illness than workers in any other industry during 2012. The Innovation Trail's Kate O'Connell has more on why people in the public sector may be more at risk.
It may not be something you've ever considered, but a lot of the time, there's an inherent risk associated with jobs in the public sector. And according to Nellie Brown, director of the Workplace Health and Safety Program at Cornell University, that has a big impact on statistics like these.
The police and firefighting and security and prison kind of work and water and wastewater and road and highway construction and maintenance. And we sometimes expect people in the public sector to take on these risks. This is what we expect our government to do. And yet certain hazards go along with that.
But other factors could also be shaping those figures. Stephen Medeiros, spokesman for the CSEA, the union representing many public workers in New York, says the economic downturn and the subsequent tightening of state and local budgets has put workers at risk.
We've seen a lot of people retiring, so that the institutional knowledge and know-how is going out the door, and new hires, if they're even coming in at all, are not being adequately trained and provided with equipment because there are expenses associated with that. So we're seeing in many cases some penny-wise and dollar-foolish budgeting choices.
Madeira says there's been a spike in the number of workplace deaths in the public sector too, averaging about one death per month during 2013. And that's a reflection of inadequate staffing, old equipment, and a lack of training, he says. More than half the states in the nation lack health and safety laws that protect public workers. Madeira says New York State is ahead of the curve in that respect. But last year figures and the BLS data show there are still issues that need to be addressed. In Rochester, I'm Kate O'Connell for the Innovation Trail.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. Copies are available. Call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1407. Or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at the same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.